big question in business, which is more important for rural America, phone access or internet access?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Today, the federal agency that oversees phone and internet service will consider overhauling how it funds access to those things in rural parts of the country. Now, the head of the Federal Communications Commission says he wants to use the Universal Service Fund to help pay for internet access instead of telephone service in those rural parts. The fund is a fee that was tacked on to our phone bills 15 years ago. Marketplace's David Gura is with us live from Washington with more on that, on those plans. Good morning, David.
Hey, Steve.
Why is the FCC proposing this change?
Well, you got to keep in mind what things were like back then 15 years ago. Not everyone had a cell phone. We were using Prodigy. Remember Prodigy and dial-up modems. We talked to our travel agents over the phone. I talked to Michael Romano. He's with the National Telecommunications Cooperative Association. That group represents hundreds of small communications companies.
There's a real value to the entirety of the country being able to have significant, substantial, meaningful broadband connectivity.
We can watch movies online. We can work online. We can buy our plane tickets online. The upshot here is a landline phone to talk on isn't as important as it once was. And because some say it's not as important as having high-speed access to the internet, there have been calls to reform this fund for a while now.
So if the calls to change it have been out there before, David, is there enough support now to change it?
Well, there have been complaints that the fund's gotten too big, that it needs more government supervision. I read that in some corners of the country can cost up to $20,000 to get a house online. Supporters say that if the government encourages more competition, those kind of prices could go down. It's likely the FCC is going to vote to go forward this today, and if it does, the public's going to have some time to weigh in, to comment on the proposal, but we probably won't get a final decision for months.
All right. Marketplace's David Gura in Washington. David, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Taxpayers didn't just bail out too big to fail banks. The government also gave money to community banks as well. And now, with an economic recovery going on, the banks are paying taxpayers back. Today in Illinois, the investment could really pay dividends, as Marketplace senior business correspondent Bob Moon explains.
The government will be auctioning off so-called stock warrants in Chicago-area-based Wintrust Financial, which allow holders to buy shares at discounted prices. Banking industry consultant Bert Ely says these kinds of sales are adding to tens of millions in dividend payments Uncle Sam has already raked in.
This is a little bit of sweetener, so to speak, for taxpayers, which basically increases the profit the government makes on its investment in the bank.
Provided all the warrants being offered get snapped up, today's auction could raise a minimum of $21 million. But Ely notes the government has been selling its interests in larger banks that might be more attractive to investors.
The big banks where you have a very substantial amount of stock outstanding, lots of stockholders, the warrants are easier to sell.
Whatever the government takes in, these sales are bolstering the positive side of the ledger for the Troubled Asset Relief Program. On the other hand, the AIG and car industry bailouts and foreclosure prevention program are expected to lose money for a projected net loss of as much as $28 billion. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are mixed right now. Toy giant Hasbro said profit fell 16% in the fourth quarter, including the all-important holiday period. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow tacked on 69 points. It closed at 12,161.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation Energy, committed to customer choice and powering America's clean energy future through investments in natural gas, nuclear, wind, solar, and efficiency technologies. And by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
The people of tiny, landlocked Bhutan call their country the happiest place on Earth. Former Marketplace reporter Lisa Napoli put her life on hold and traveled to the Asian kingdom to set up a student radio station. She chronicles her adventure in a book out today titled Radio Shangri-La. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
So here you are, English-speaking Lisa, fast-paced American being asked to go to this country to help set up this radio station. What was going through your mind? What'd you think?
Well, I was working here at Marketplace, and I was thinking I needed a change. And I thought, well, radio is radio, right? You know, how different could it be? I wasn't worried about the language barrier, and I should have probably been worried about the cultural barrier, but I wasn't.
And you went there with an open mind, and what happened?
Well, it was such an interesting place to be. They have such a different perspective. They measure their well-being in terms of gross national happiness.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. How do you measure happiness?
They don't have a real metric. It's not like I can say, hey, Steve, fill in this form and I can tell you whether you're happy or not. But basically, they're committed to not just making money, working like maniacs. They're all about wellness, well-being, balance, and they factor that into whether they're successful.
Why are these people happier than, say, people in China or people in India or people in Bangladesh?
Well, some people believe that Bhutan was happier because it was insulated from all those places around it. Television was outlawed until about 10 years ago, and tourists have only been allowed in since 1972. So you can feel very happy about your environment. And the minute you start seeing someone wearing something nicer than you, or on television they have a nicer kitchen than you do, you start to think, maybe I'm not so happy with what I've got. And that's how Bhutan maintained happiness for a long time. It just didn't see what the rest of the world had.
But it's changing. All these things, these metrics that are measured here in the United States and other Western countries have been introduced into Bhutan. Do you think this is sort of an avalanche about to happen?
Well, I've always thought the way we lived in this country, where we spend too much money on things we don't need to impress people we don't necessarily like, didn't make sense to me. So that's what we'll have to see as Bhutan grows out into the world, how people are able to retain that core value system.
Lisa Napoli, author of Radio Shangri-La, thanks.
Thank you.
There are videos of Lisa's travels at marketplace.org. Finally, Dale Smith has a big decision to make. Will the longtime Oregon barber take a 75-page written exam to reinstate his license to cut hair? The Oregon Board of Cosmetology voted last month to not renew Smith's license until he passes current certification. Smith is 82 years old. Last time he took a barber's test was when he graduated barber school in 1956. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. On Twitter at Radio Chio, this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
You think you've got problems? Could be a lot worse.
It shattered. Like, my bottom five teeth got knocked out. They were, like, sitting in my throat. I could feel them. And my jaw has a big crack right here, and they put two plates and 12 screws in.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Just grin and bear it. How to handle pain Freakonomics style next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.